Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Janam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 13, Chapter entitled The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, Text number 22 and 23. Today we'll finish the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, and then tomorrow we'll begin the first canto. Bhave bhave yata bhakti padayos tava jayate tata kurushva devishya natastvam no yata prabhu Bhave bhave. In life after life. Yata. So that. Bhakti. Devotional service. Padayo. At the lotus feet. Tava. Of you. Jayate. Arises. Tata. So. Kurushva, please do. Deva Isha, O Lord of Lords. Narata, the Master. Twam, you. Na, how. Yata, because. Prapo, O Lord. Translations by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. O Lord of Lords, O Master, please grant us pure devotional service at your lotus feet, life after life. Translation responsibly. O Lord of Lords.
O Lord of Lords.
O Master.
O Master.
Please grant us pure devotional service.
Please grant us pure devotional service.
At your lotus feet.
At your lotus feet.
Life after life.
Life after life.
Text 23 is the final verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nama Sankirtanam Yashya Savapa. This is a weird one. I'll just read this answer. Nama Sankirtanam Yashya Savapapa Pranashanam Pranamo Dukha Shamanas Tam Namami Harim Param. Translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sinful reactions, and the offering of obeisances unto whom relieves all material suffering. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 12th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam
Ki Jai.
The 12th canto was completed at Gainesville, Florida on Sunday, July the 18th, 1982. End of the 12th canto. Conclusion. We offer our most respectful obeisances at the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa, Harikraj Acharya Ashtottara Sata, Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and by His mercy to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, to Lord Chaitanya and His eternal associates, to Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and to the supreme transcendental literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. By the causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have been able to approach the lotus feet of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Sridhar Swami, and other great Vaishnava Acharyas. And by carefully studying their liberated commentaries, we have humbly tried to complete the Srimad Bhagavatam. We are the insignificant servants of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. And by His mercy, by His mercy, we have been allowed to serve Him through the presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Gyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kaupata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Pievacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Ram Rama Hare Hare. So we are all very fortunate that we happen to be here in this auspicious place, Sri Melvin Mahaprabhu Mandir, that Srila Prabhupada himself established this temple through his disciples. And Srila Prabhupada himself sat right there where he is now sitting in his Murti form. And he was looking at the deities just right there from where he is sitting. And he said, "This is not Melbourne, it is Vaikuntha." And he said, "It is not Vaikuntha, it is Vrindavan." So, by the mercy of a pure Vaishnava, a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, then a apparently material place like Albert Park in Victoria, it can become a fully spiritual dham. This is an extension of Sri Vrindavan Dham itself. Because Prabhupada has established the deities here, he called this temple Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. So, when he established Gaur-Nitai here in 1975, they were brought from India, and Prabhupada personally installed them. He personally did the Abhishek, personally installed them on the altar here. So, he called this place Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. So, when we take darshan, the system is, when we enter the temple, we take darshan of Guru and then Gauranga. So when we take darshan on the first altar, which is the system that we follow of taking darshan of Sri Sri Gaur-Nitai, then we are darshaning Mayapur Dham. Because Gaur-Nitai, wherever they are present, that is none different from Mayapur Dham. So Prabhupada has established Mayapur Dham here in this temple. Then we take darshan of Radha Vallabha, which means that wherever Radha and Vallabha are together, Radha and Krishna are together, that is Vrindavan. So then we take darshan of Vrindavan, and then we move to the third altar, which is a very special altar, because Prabhupada established, he installed Radha and Vallabha here in Melbourne, just down in St Kilda, which is only a few kilometres from here, in 1973. And then Jagannath Balarama Subhadra appeared before Srila Prabhupada, I think in 74, on the Ratha Yatra. So the first time they appeared was in front of Prabhupada on the Ratha Yatra car. And Prabhupada himself danced in front of them for the entire Ratha Yatra parade through the streets of Melbourne. And they finished the parade in the old exhibition buildings, which is in the top part of the city, in the gardens at the upper part of the city. And then they took the chariot into the exhibition hall, because it's a huge hall. And the chariot itself went into the hall, and then Prabhupada sat on the chariot, on his Vyasasana, and he gave a lecture in front of about 300 people, just directly from the Ratha Yatra chariot. So, this altar of Jagannath Balarama Subhadra, that is none different from Dwarka, or Jagannath Puri, or one could say even Kurukshetra. Because Jagannath Balarama Subhadra, they eternally reside in Jagannath Puri, And Jagannath is Krishna in Dwarkadham, that Krishna is feeling separation from Vrindavan. So we read in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which we've gone through in the last few years, if you go back to the 10th canto, near the end of the 10th canto, there is the pastime where Krishna and the Dwarkabasis, they travel to Kurukshetra, because there is a solar eclipse. So they go to Kurukshetra, and at that time, the Brijbasis, or the residents of Vrindavan, they also travel to that place. And they have not seen Krishna for a long time. So Krishna and the Brijbasis, they meet after a long separation. So at that time, Krishna or Mother Rohini, who is the mother of Lord Balaram, she wanted to tell the Dwarkabasis, because the Dwarkabasis had met the Brijbasis at Kurukshetra. So some of them were meeting them for the first time. They'd heard about them because Krishna was brought up by them for the first 10 years where he was on the earth. But they had not met the Brijbasis, not all of them. So when they first met them, they were amazed at how much devotion the Brijbasis had for Krishna, how much love they had for Krishna. And they could see that actually Krishna had more affection for them. Even though the Dwarkabasis were Krishna's own family, but Krishna had more affection for the Brijbasis even than he did for the Dwarkabasis. So when he got to Kurukshetra and the Dwarkabasis were witnessing how much love there was between Krishna and the Brijbasis, then at that time Rohini took the Dwarkabasis into a pandal, into a large tent. And she said to the Dwarkabasis, "I will tell you about the exchanges and the dealings between Krishna and the Brijbasis, which I witnessed, because Rohini was in Vrindavan and then she was in Dwarka, so she was the only one who was there at both places besides Krishna and Balaram. So she said to Subhadra, Krishna's sister, she said, "You stay at the door of the tent and don't let Krishna and Balaram enter, because if they hear what is being discussed, there will be too much emotion for them. They will become too much overwhelmed by emotion, by prema, by love, if they hear these pastimes." So Subhadra was there at the door and she was listening, but then she became overcome when she heard the description of Krishna's dealings with the Brijbasis. So then you hear sometimes if someone is talking about you, if you're in this room and someone's in the next room and they're talking about you, then you begin to listen. So then she was listening and then she became stunned in ecstasy and all of her limbs shrunk back into her body and her eyes became very wide and she took on this form that we see here on the altar, Subhadra. So Balaram came and Balaram saw Subhadra like this, and then Balaram thought, "This is very peculiar. I've never seen Subhadra like this." So then Balaram also began to listen, and when he heard what was being discussed, then he also took that form. And then Krishna came and he saw Balaram and he saw Subhadra, and then when he heard Rohini's discussion, when she was, her descriptions to the Dwarkabasis, he also took that form. So this is Jagannath, this form manifest in Kurukshetra. And then Narada Muni, he came at that time and he saw these three forms of Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra. Then later on, when Indradrumna Maharaj was in Puri and he was commissioning Vishwakarma, the architect of the demigods, to carve forms, deities of Jagannath, Balaram, and Subhadra, then Vishwakarma said, "I will carve the forms, but you must not interrupt me. If you interrupt me, then I will not finish." So then he was carving for many days, but then Indradrumna Swami was listening at the door, and for several days he heard nothing taking place. So then he thought something's wrong. So he opened the door and he entered the place. And then Vishwakarma was there. And he said to him, I told you that if you interrupted, I cannot finish. So then he went back to the heavenly planets. And the forms that were left were the deities in an apparently unfinished form. So then Indradyumna Maharaj was very upset. He thought, now how can I worship the deities? But then Narada came at that time. And Narada said, no, I've seen these forms. I've seen Krishna, Balarama, Subhadra like this before. So then he informed him that the king, that you can worship the deities in this form. So then Indradyumna Maharaj installed Jagannath, Balaram and Subhadra in Jagannath Puri at that time. So this is Krishna from Dwarka feeling separation from the residents of Vrindavan. This is Jagannath, Balaram and Subhadra. So when we come in front of this altar, then we are taking darshan, we are in Jagannath Puri. Or we are in Dwarka. Or you could even say we're in Kurukshetra. Like that. So the entire spiritual world has become manifest in this temple due to Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada has established this temple and all three of the most prominent and important holy dharms in our tradition are manifest in this particular temple. One time, in Vrindavan, near the end of Prabhupada's pastimes, I think in 1977, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was serving Srila Prabhupada, and one day he thought he would go for a japa walk in between while he was doing his service for Prabhupada. So he walked outside the Krishna Balaram temple and he went for a walk through Vrindavan. Vrindavan was a little different back then, it wasn't as built up as it is now. So he went for a walk and then he chanted his japa and then he came back. And then when he came back and he saw Srila Prabhupada, then Srila Prabhupada said, where were you? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, I went for a walk, Prabhupada. I went to. Prabhupada said, I've spent so much time and so much money to create this temple, the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And Prabhupada said, the entire spiritual world is inside the four walls of this temple. And he said, and you want to go outside. You want to go out. I've created this temple and the whole spiritual world is in this temple and you want to go away. Prabhupada said, do not wander away. So Prabhupada was protecting his disciples because they were young at that time and there were many other philosophies and so forth in Vrindavan. So he did not want them to become influenced. So he was speaking like that. We should be careful. So Prabhupada's point is that the entire spiritual world is within the four walls of this temple. You come into this temple, right, and the entire spiritual world is present here. Vrindavan is here, Mayapur is here, Jagannath Puri is here, Kurukshetra, Dwarka, the entire spiritual world. Krishna himself is manifest. Wherever Krishna is, wherever we see Krishna, wherever we see Radharani, wherever we see Gaur Nithai, that is the spiritual world. So this place has become most auspicious because Srila Prabhupada has established this temple. Now, why did Prabhupada establish the temple? Srila Prabhupada's original idea for ISKCON was that we would distribute books, and with the profits, Prabhupada said his directorate for the BBT, or his instruction for the BBT, is that we would distribute books, and then 50% of the money collected from book distribution, and especially in the 70s and in the after the 70s also, but in the 70s, there were millions of books being distributed every year around the world. So Prabhupada's instruction was 50% of the profit from the BBT would go back to the BBT to print more books. And then Prabhupada's instruction was that 50% of the profit would go to ISKCON to establish new temples, to build new temples. So this was Prabhupada's plan for ISKCON from the very beginning. We would distribute books and build temples, and then Prabhupada noted that the temples would be places where people would be trained in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada actually made he actually says, as one conversational one letter, Prabhupada says, if there is only deity worship going on, like you see in many temples in India, they worship the deity, but there is no preaching. There are no Bhagavatam classes, kirtan is not there regularly. Prabhupada said, if you simply worship the deity, but you do not preach, or there is not spiritual discussion going on, he said then you will simply smoke. Meaning that you'll begin to smoke marijuana. You'll simply just turn into, Prabhupada said, a hippie. Then you will become just a lazy person who goes, does a little deity worship, then eats some chapatis and sleeps, and Prabhupada said, and then you'll begin to not follow the regulative principles. You need to be hearing Krishna Katha. So Prabhupada's instruction to the devotees of ISKCON is that the temples are places where spiritual topics, kirtan, shravanam and kirtanam, kirtan and Bhagavatam class are regularly going on. That is the purpose of the temple. Then the temple is full of life. Then the temple becomes a spiritually potent place where people can advance in Krishna consciousness. So this is the point of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Prabhupada established these temples for this reason. He said, so people will be trained in Krishna consciousness. So we can learn how to become better devotees of Radha and Krishna, of Gaura Nithyananda, of Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra. So that our bhakti will grow. Your bhakti cannot grow unless you are absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami says that if a devotee has been a devotee for a long time, you know, if we've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a number of years, then he says that if you've been practicing for a number of years but you have not developed taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, then he says, then you have to increase your hearing and chanting. If we've been practicing for a long time, we've been practicing devotional service for 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or 30 years or 40 years or 50 years or 60 years. If we've been practicing for a long time, but we're not getting a taste for hearing and chanting. Sometimes devotees feel like this. I've been doing this for a number of years. I've been doing this for a long time. But I don't have a taste for hearing and chanting. Then Jiva Goswami says you must increase your hearing and chanting. You have to do more hearing and chanting. Then the taste will come. Rupa Goswami gives the example in the Upadeshamrita, in the Nectar of Instruction, just like when someone is suffering from jaundice. In India it is very common that people get jaundice. They turn yellow. Their liver begins to have some problem. I got it one time when I went to India. I came back in 1994 and then I got some jaundice like that. So then what is the cure for the jaundice? The cure is that you, Rupa Goswami points out, you have to take rock candy. Means you have to take sugar. When it is melted down, the sugar turned into like a rock candy, which is very sweet, then you have to take it regularly. So you regularly take that rock candy, and when you taste it, when you have jaundice, it tastes bitter. It is not pleasant. But the more you take it, then gradually it becomes sweet. And you know your jaundice or your liver condition is recovering when it tastes sweet again. Because naturally it tastes sweet, but for you it will taste bitter. So Rupa Goswami says that you may not have a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. But if you continue to do it, that will give you a taste. It will purify your consciousness. And when your consciousness becomes purified, then you will feel the taste coming again. And you'll feel very blissful in hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this is actually the way to become purified in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada's point, or Prabhupada's desire for our society, is that we engage in hearing and chanting. And then we take that hearing and chanting out to the public. That was the system. So Prabhupada's instruction was, we do Harinam, Sankirtan. We do book distribution. We do prasadam distribution. This is how we spread this movement. In the 1970s, then Tomal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnu Jaya Swami, they began the Radha Damodar Bus Party. So they brought buses, and then they had many brahmacharis and many sannyasis, and they would travel all around America, and they would distribute books. And the buses were traveling temples. They had deities installed on the buses, and on each bus there was a full deity worship program going on. Artis and Olga offerings, deities were being dressed every day. It was like a traveling temple. So they would go and they would preach, they'd distribute books through Harina, and then they'd bring people back to the bus, to the temple, and then they would make devotees in this way. So Prabhupada, he liked this idea. He said, yes, traveling temples. That you take the deity to the people. Vishnu Jan Swami, he would drive his bus to the college, to the university campuses around America, and they would set up a festival on the grass at the university, and then Radha Damodar, the deities, would come out, and they'd have a little mandap, a little like tent, and then the deities were there, and the deities would be worshipped in front of all the people. And in this way, people became attracted to Krishna consciousness by taking the deities to the people. So this is our society. This is ISKCON. We have to take Krishna to the people. We have to go out and distribute books, do Harinam Sankirtan, distribute prasadam. Even one time, you read that Vishnu Jan Swami, he was preaching. He was a very charismatic, powerful, pure, potent preacher. So he was preaching on the lawn at one of the universities, and many of the students and the professors, they were standing around listening to him. Maybe 50 or 60 people were listening to him. And then he was preaching very enthusiastically, and then he said, everyone should offer their obeisances to Radha Damodar. Everyone, offer your obeisances. So then everyone was so influenced by his preaching. Everyone, all the professors, all the students, everyone just bowed down on the grass in front of Radha Damodar. Just because he was enthusiastic to take Krishna out to the people. So this is the system of Krishna consciousness. We take Krishna out to the people. And this is the mood of ISKCON. And that's why ISKCON is different to every other, you could say, Gaudiya institution. That the emphasis on preaching is much stronger in ISKCON than it is in any other Vaishnava institution. And that's why ISKCON is becoming the most prominent Gaudiya Vaishnava institution on the planet. Because the emphasis is on taking Krishna through the people. And Prabhupada, he would push the devotees to take Krishna through the people. Prabhupada would constantly be pushing the devotees to preach Krishna consciousness and to take Krishna consciousness out. Because this is the method of becoming selfless. Because the nature of bhakti is ahoituki. Bhakti is not selfish. In the material world, the conditioned soul is always concerned with his self. That's the nature of the conditioned souls in the material world. Always concerned about themselves. What am I doing? Or what am I getting from my own sense gratification? But the nature of the pure soul is to simply serve Krishna without any personal desire. So why did Prabhupada emphasize and why did he push people to go and preach so much around the world? Even His Holiness Prabhavishnu Swami, he was the GBC for Australia, he comes here sometimes. Then he joined the temple, and the first day he joined, he literally been in the temple for 1 hour. And the devotee asked him for a donation. He came to visit the temple, and whoever was there preaching to him asked him for a donation. And Maharaj gave him his whole wallet. He just took his wallet out of his pocket, whatever was in, he just gave it to him. And then after 3 days of being in the temple, he was sent with another devotee to go and open a center somewhere in England. After 3 days, go and open a center. That was Prabhupada's mood in the beginning. Just go and preach, because it makes you selfless. And that is the point. In order to become a pure devotee of Krishna, you have to become selfless. You have to become ahoituki, without material desires. So Prabhupada would emphasize that we all preach, and he would push us to go and preach for this reason. To give up our own material desires, not to worry about ourselves so much, but to worry about how the conditioned souls will develop their Krishna consciousness. So, in this verse, or Prabhupada, he created these temples for this purpose. Prabhupada said the temples are like a base. In a war, then the devotees or the soldiers, they have a base, and from their base they will go out and they will fight. So Prabhupada said the temples are like a base. We come here, we rejuvenate ourselves by following our sadhana. We take prasad, we do kirtan, we hear the Bhagavatam class, we worship the deity, we become enthused in Krishna consciousness, and then we go out and then we fight maya. On behalf of the Sankirtan movement, we go out and spread Krishna consciousness. And then we come back and we bring people back to this place. And we bring them back here so that they can also become attracted to Krishna consciousness. That is the purpose of the temple. We bring them back so they will become attracted. So they come here and then they become attracted to Krishna. And why do they become attracted? Because there is hearing and chanting going on. There is kirtan going on. There is Bhagavatam class going on. And because they're hearing these things, they become attracted to Krishna. So, the Prabhupada established his temple for this purpose. That is the purpose of the temple. Otherwise, what is the good of the temple? What is the purpose? If there's no preaching going on, it is not sufficient. So it says here in this final verse of the Bhagavatam that the congregation or chanting of the holy names destroys all sinful reactions and offers obeisances unto whom and the offering of obeisances unto whom relieves all material suffering. So actually Jiva Goswami, he points out that one of the main points of the Bhagavatam is to glorify the holy name. That is one of the important points. The Bhagavatam performs various duties simultaneously, or performs various functions, yeah, simultaneously. Simultaneously, various functions are performed. So one of the most important features of the Bhagavatam, or one of the most important points of the Bhagavatam, is that it glorifies the holy name of Krishna. You'll see this is the very final verse of the Bhagavatam. And what does the verse say? How does the verse begin? The last verse of the Bhagavatam. Yeah, it begins by Nama Sankirtan. This is the very final verse of the Bhagavatam. So the final verse glorifies Nama Sankirtan. The congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Now in the Shikshastika, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Cheto Dapana Marjanam Bhava Maha Devagni Nirvarpanam Shriyaha Karaiva Chandrika Vitaranam Vijavadhu Jivanam Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam Pratitanam Punam Rita Swadhanam Savatma Snapanam Puram Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So Mahaprabhu says, Puram Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Now he doesn't just, Mahaprabhu doesn't just say kirtan. He doesn't just say kirtan, he says Sankirtan. Sankirtan, Sama Kirtan. Sankirtan means congregational chanting. Just like in the Prema Dwani prayers every morning, or whenever we do kirtan, then we say the prayers. So then we say Samaveta Bhakta, Brinda Kijai. Sama means all the devotees together, Kijai. All glories to all the, and Prabhupada would say, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories. So Samaveta Bhakta. All of the devotees, Sama. Sankirtan. Samakirtan means congregational chanting. Chanting with the devotees. That is when the holy name manifests itself most fully. When you're chanting in the association with the other devotees. Then the holy name, the nectar or the mellow of the holy name or the taste of the holy name becomes manifest at that time, the most fully. So Mahaprabhu says, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. By chanting the holy name of Sri Krishna, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. This is the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Param Vijayate. Jai means
victory.
Vijay means Vijay. Yeah, Jai means victory. Vijay means great victory. Vijay. And V accentuates things, like karma. And then we have Vikarma. Right? You have karma. Karma means activity. Vikarma means very negative activity. Right? So, Jai means glorious. Vijay means extremely glorious. Param means Param. Supreme. Ultimate. The highest thing. Param Vijay. So Mahaprabhu says, Param Vijayate. Sri Krishna says, it is the supremely auspicious activity. There is nothing more auspicious than Sankirtan. What we're doing now is Sankirtan. We're hearing about Krishna congregationally. We come to the Bhagavatam class. This is Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. With the devotees, we are hearing and chanting about Krishna. This is the system. So Param Vijayate Sri Krishna. So Nama Sankirtan, in the very final verse of the Bhagavatam, Nama Sankirtan is being emphasized. That we must chant, the way to overcome the influence of the age of Kali is to congregationally chant the holy name of Krishna. Nama Sankirtan. Now Jiva Goswami points out that the Bhagavatam, this is one of the main purposes of the Bhagavatam, to glorify the holy name. In the very first chapter of the first canto, which we're about to start again tomorrow, then you'll hear about the glories of the holy name. I think in the 11th verse, I can't remember, it's one of the very early verses, there's a verse glorifying the holy name. Right? And then all through the Bhagavatam, there are various verses, especially near the end of the Bhagavatam. There are different Kaleya, Dosha, Nitya, Rajan, which is in the 12th canto. These kind of verses, they glorify directly the potency of the holy name. And Jiva Goswami points out that right in the middle of the Bhagavatam, what is the pastime that is right in the middle of the Bhagavatam? Ajamil, right? Very beginning of the 6th canto, right? Right in the middle of the Bhagavatam, then you have the pastime of Ajamil. Now Jiva Goswami points out because this pastime is glorifying the power or the potency of chanting the holy name. Ajamil chanted the holy name at the time of death. And he wasn't even chanting the holy name thinking of Krishna. He was thinking of something else other than Krishna. But because he chanted the holy name at the time of death, then what took place? He was liberated. That is the potency of chanting the holy name. So the Bhagavatam, one of its principal purposes is to glorify the chanting of the holy name. Nama Sankirtanam. So this is the reason why the Bhagavatam is finishing like this. So it is very auspicious, as we have said in previous classes, that we have heard the Bhagavatam all the way from beginning to end. And tomorrow we'll start again. And then we'll go from beginning to end again. And then we'll see who is here out of all of us in 20 years when it finishes next time. I remember last time it started, about 20 years ago. I think the first class on the first canto, I think Prabhav Prabhu gave the class, from what I can remember, about 20 years ago. And then we've gone all the way through one class. Full completion of the Bhagavatam. Incredibly auspicious. this shows that the it's very hard to maintain things in Kali Yuga. It's easier to create things, it's easier to destroy things than it is to maintain things. Just like when this temple was built, it took a great deal of work to establish this temple, to create it, a great deal of work. And to destroy this temple will take a great deal of effort also. There will be a point in time in the future where this temple will no longer cease to exist. Got the influence of Kali and the influence of time like that. So to destroy something and to begin something, it takes a great deal of effort. But by far the greatest effort it takes is to maintain something, is to keep something going continuously. We can start something and we can finish something, that's easier, but to keep it going continuously, especially after years and years and years, then this is a great yogya. It's a great sacrifice. It requires sacrifice. It requires selflessness. There's so many devotees here, Aniruddha Prabhu and Achintya-ripa Mataji, and so many devotees are keeping the temple going. This is a great service to Prabhupada, to Krishna. Then in Kali Yuga, it's not easy to keep these things going in Kali Yuga. But things are going, not only are they going, but they're expanding. And that gives Prabhupada great pleasure when he sees everything. Prabhupada said when he left the world, he said, at least maintain what I have begun. Mm-hmm. At least maintain. But if you can expand it, then that's even more glorious. So things have expanded here since Prabhupada left. So this is glorious. And one of the main reasons is because the Bhagavatam is consistently being heard. But what is the effect of hearing the Bhagavatam every day? Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nashta Prayeshva Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavat Yuktama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. The bhakti will be established within your heart. This is the effect of hearing the Bhagavatam regularly, studying the Bhagavatam regularly. It cleanses the heart. Shrinvatam, Swakata, Krishna. Punya, Shravana Kirtana. Hridyantasto, Yabhadrani. Vidhunoti, Suhritsta. The heart becomes cleansed. Abhadrani means inauspicious things. Inauspicious qualities, they disappear from the heart by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam on a regular basis. So this is the instruction of the Bhagavatam. So if we go on sincerely and regularly hearing and chanting around us nicely, and hearing the Bhagavatam regularly, then our hearts will become purified and we'll get to the ultimate goal of life. Okay. Any questions or comments on what we have discussed?
You were mentioning one point about the way to become purified, that is we have to absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting. How to actually absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting? Because like in morning we may come in the temple and attend class, but as day progress there is a lot of other works or professional duties and other things. So how to actually absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting?
It takes practice to do it. Just like one time in 1977, Prabhupada was leaving this world and Tamal Krishna Maharaj and other devotees, they were serving him. And it was very intense because Prabhupada required a great deal of attention because he's physically, his body was unwell. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was practically serving Prabhupada, you know, practically all day, they were resting maybe 6 hours a day, chanting their rounds maybe 2 hours a day, taking prasad, a little bit of prasadam, and then virtually the rest of the day they were just absorbed in serving Prabhupada. So at one point, Srila Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said, "Are you reading my books?" And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a little shocked because he looked at Prabhupada thinking that, "Prabhupada, I practically don't even have time to read your books, because I'm so absorbed." And Prabhupada said to him, "It requires practice." And Prabhupada explained that you have to reduce your eating and your sleeping. And by reducing your eating and sleeping, then you'll have less time absorbed in material or bodily activities, more time absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So it requires practice. Even when we're at work, you may be at work, but if you become more advanced in Krishna consciousness, then, and if your sadhana is strong, then gradually during the day you'll think of Krishna more and more, to the point that you practically think of Krishna all the time. Even when you're doing some other activity, but you're thinking of Krishna. So we have to practice that, it takes time. I know one devotee, he worked for Shell. Shell has, do they still have an office building at the top of the city? They used to have a big office building at the top of the city. He used to work there. So he had to work from 9 in the morning to 5 at night in the office. That's 8 hours of work. So he would work 7 hours, and at lunchtime he would take the Bhagavatam, and when everyone left the office he would photocopy the Bhagavatam, and then for 1 hour after lunch, when everyone came back in the office and they were working on the computers, he'd sit there in front of the computer, but actually he'd have the Bhagavatam photocopy in front of him, and he'd just be reading Bhagavatam for 1 hour. So you have to think of ways to remember Krishna, even while you're doing your material activity. So it requires practice. That is the process of Krishna consciousness. Does that help? Any other question or comment?
In the translation, Krishna Prabhu has written, service at your lotus feet. So why lotus feet is so much emphasized every day?
One thing is the lotus is very beautiful. So many parts of Krishna's body are compared to the lotus. His eyes are said to be lotus-like. His feet are said to be lotus-like. His hands, his palms are said to be lotus-like. His navel is said to be lotus-like. So it's very beautiful. So it looks pinkish color, like a lotus. So it's very beautiful. Also, the nature of the lotus is that even though it grows in the water, but the lotus leaf or the lotus flower, if you put water on it, the water just slides off. You've seen that? If you put water on the lotus leaf, it just turns into beads. Yeah, and then it... So, lotus feet...
Hydrophobic.
Yeah, hydrophobic, like that. Whenever there's water on it, then it just glides away. So it is said that Krishna's feet, even though Krishna may appear to descend or enter into this material world, it says that Krishna's lotus feet never come in contact with this material world. And similarly it says, Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati Sadma. So the lotus feet of the spiritual master are said to be like that. Even though the spiritual master is apparently walking in this world like us, but he never has contact with the material energy, in the sense that he does not become affected by the material energy. So there's different reasons why it is given.
They are the purest of lotus feet. They are the purest of the whole body. Because everything is in the connected to the lotus.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. Did you have a point?
This first, that's similar to the second half of fourth Shikshastika breath.
To the
fourth Shikshastika breath.
Nādhanam nājanam nāsundurim kavitamba jagadishi kami mama jamini jamini ishwari bhagavata bhakti hohoitu kitvai. Because actually the Shikshastika is a summation of the whole Bhagavatam. The philosophy of the whole Bhagavatam is within the 8 verses of the Shikshastika. Like that. So we'll see the philosophy of the Bhagavatam always within the Shikshastika. You can always find the Bhagavat philosophy within the Shikshastika. Okay. Any other points? Any other point?
I just had a thought on that Krishna being not affected by anything in the material world. I know of a temple where the deity actually lost weight because it wasn't accepting the offering. So it seems like he can be affected by lots of things.
Yeah, well that's
his.
It comes under Krishna's desire or pastime. Krishna can only appear to lose weight if he desires. So if he desires to show that pastime, then that's his prerogative.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's affected by the material energy. Doesn't mean he's affected by those who are serving him. But he's showing those who are serving him. Maybe he wants to show them something. So he is
affected by love.
Yeah,
affected by love.
Yeah, he's not affected. I mean, if he's doing that, that's only because he maybe that's a pastime of the deity. Maybe the deity is appearing like that because he's trying to show something to the devotees. Like that, so. But he's not affected. It does, he's not forced to do anything. Any other question or comment?
Even though we have never known about the temple, as you mentioned, that the charge we should work, why do we still have inclination to go to other holy mosques like Mayapur and Vrindavan? Why don't we still get inclination to go there?
My realization is that when I come to this temple, yeah, because now I don't live close to this temple. I used to live close to this temple for many years. And now I don't live so close, so when I come here I feel like I'm coming to a holy place. I feel like it's very powerful. It's a tirtha. So it feels like Vrindavan, like Mayapur. Like that. But then I feel that when I go to Mayapur or Vrindavan, then that just becomes magnified thousands of times. What I feel here, when I go there, becomes even more and more powerful, thousands of times powerful. So that's why we go to the Holy Dhams, because the Holy Dham is the Holy Dham. Mayapur, Vrindavan, Puri, they are Mayapur, Vrindavan and Puri. And I know that I've been here in this temple before, and I felt like that also. I felt like, I feel like when I go there. But it's just there, it's just so powerful, because it's the Lord's personal abode. These temples, Prabhupada said, they're like embassies. So like if you go, where's the Indian embassy now? In
city.
It's in the city. The embassy's in the city.
St. Kilda Road.
Yeah, St. Kilda Road. Yeah, in St. Kilda Road they have the embassy, the Indian embassy or the consul. So if you go there, then you are no longer in Australia, you're actually in India. Because if you break the law in that place, you're actually tried under Indian government as opposed to in Australia. So it's like it's a representative place. But as soon as you come back outside, then you're in Australia again. So it represents the place. So these temples, Prabhupada said, they're like embassies of the spiritual world. So you feel the Holy Dham's potency when you come to this place. But still, there's something about when you're in the Holy Dham. It's just, it's so much more. I mean, you've experienced it yourself. This is something when you go there, it's just so powerful. Is it okay?
So, do we have to go to the Holy Dham? For example, as we go for the chapati yatra, they say that if a person has been chanting since 6 months, 8 months, 6 months, then he's allowed. What if someone who is, you know, just comes in Krishna consciousness a few months before and has been chanting? Does that person allow to go to Vrindavan or should have?
Anyone can go to Vrindavan any time, but it is recommended that you wait some time. First time I went to Vrindavan, well, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness here for 2 years. So it's good for the devotees to wait a little bit. Because when you go straight into the spiritual energy in the Holy Dham, if you're not sufficiently purified, your consciousness may become affected. And we see sometimes devotees go there and they spend the whole time they're there just being sick. Because maybe their consciousness is not properly purified as yet. So it is good to purify it. Don't rush to go to the Holy Dham. First practice some bhakti, first purify yourself and then go. And even if you do go, like if you go once a year, for example, you go to Mayapur, Vrindavan and Puri, you have to do tapasya. You have to do austerity before you get to the Dham to purify your consciousness. Just like you read in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, Vidura was kicked out of the palace by Duryodhana. So when Vidura left the palace, he could have left Hastinapur and gone straight to Dwarka to be with Krishna. Krishna was on the planet at the time. But Prabhupada explains in the purport that he needed to purify his consciousness first So he spent 30 years traveling around to all the holy places, associating with all the sadhus and purifying himself, and then he met with Krishna. So when you go to the holy dham, you don't just go to the holy dham. You have to prepare yourself, and then you go to the holy dham. And then when you're in the holy dham, you have to do increase your bhakti in the holy dham. The reason we go to the holy dham is not to have a holiday. It is to purify our consciousness. So you have to increase your devotional, your hearing and chanting while you're in the holy dham. Otherwise you'll get a negative experience. Is that okay? Any other question or comment?
Well, also it says that when I was in Mahaprabhu, now Mandavari told that if a person gets accidentally, he has a cut or something, you know, so that like removes a lot of, as you said, you know, the lot of anarthas or you know, the miscreants on the path. But it says that, I'm just not able to connect that. That means they should not go on or.
No, it means that when you go there, you have to be in a humble state of mind. That's the point. When you go to the holy dham, you have to expect whatever way Krishna chooses to give me his mercy, I will accept it. So in the Shikshastra, it says, whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or make me broken hearted by not being present before me, still you are my Lord birth after birth. So sometimes we get negative material experiences in the holy dham. You go to the holy dham and you get sick or something negative happens or something happens like that. So we see that as being mercy in the holy dham. We see that as Krishna purifying our consciousness. And Krishna is teaching us to be selfless. We're just happy that we're in the holy dham. We're just happy that we can serve Krishna and do some chanting and hearing in the holy dham, some service in the holy dham. And if Krishna wants to give us some purification, then like that. So a devotee should not have any... He should not place any demands upon Krishna. He should see everything. Actually, in our life, we should not place demands upon Krishna. We should accept that whatever we get from Krishna is Krishna's mercy. That's bhakti. Na danam, na janam, na sundarim, kapitam ba jagadisha kamriye, mama jamani, jamani shri, bhagavata, bhaktiya, ahoituki, ahoituki twayi. Ahoituki means causeless. I just serve you. Whether it's good, whether it's bad. If I don't have danam, if I don't have money, if I don't have janam, if I don't have followers, sundarim, if I don't have association with the opposite sex, so be it. I just serve Krishna. So we have to learn to be selfless. That's the point. Is that it? Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, in few verses before, Kashi was mentioned, Banaras. Few verses before finishing, and I hear that Lord Shiva personally, whosoever died in Varanasi, Kashi, he chants the name of Rama in the name of the person who died. So why the Kashi is not emphasized so much in the normal classes?
Because our place is Vrindavan. We worship Krishna. So we're bridge buses, we worship Vrindavan, we worship Gauranga, so then we worship Mayapur. That's our place. It says in Mayapur that if you pass away in Mayapur, it says in the Navadvip Dharmahatmya, if you pass away in Mayapur, Lord Shiva comes to you at the time of death and he whispers Gauranga in your ear. Like that. So that is our desire, to pass away in Mayapur or Vrindavan. With the devotees of Krishna. Any other question or comments? Because he'd been associating with Duryodhana. So even a very advanced devotee, if you associate with people who don't have good character, you may become affected. So he felt that he'd become contaminated by the association. So then he felt he had to purify himself. So. Any other question or comment?
Prabhupada never been to Vrindavan, but I've heard that in the night time some people are not allowed to go in there.
You're allowed to go, but you have to go with devotees. That's the point. Don't go by yourself.
Then they say it's really dangerous.
Dangerous means?
They say dangerous in a way that the normal individual can't see the energies of the Lord over there, which he plays in the night time with the other devotees. And they say Krishna do play with other gopis and devotees over there.
Yeah. Krishna's always doing Leela in Vrindavan all day. Krishna's in Vrindavan, we just can't see him, that's all. So it means stay here in the west, come to the temple, Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, purify yourself and get to the platform where you're chanting 16 rounds a day, and then chant 16 rounds a day successively for a period of time and purify yourself, and then after some time with other devotees you go to the holy dharma, and under their shelter you will be protected. But if you go there by yourself, then you may have problems like that. Don't go by yourself because you won't understand what to do or how to do. Just like when you come to the temple, you need to be trained how to act in the temple, right? And then you have to be trained how to approach the deity like that. So similarly, when you go to the holy dharma, you need to be trained how to go to the holy dharma, how to approach the deity. If you go there by yourself, you'll be okay. You just need to be protected. Spiritual life means we're always under the shelter of devotees. Then we're safe. If you're not under shelter of devotees, then you have problems. Okay? Okay. Any other question? Or?
At that point of death, at that time of death, just going before, does Krishna come to us, or is he in the heart?
At the time of death, does Krishna come to us, or is he within the heart? Mm-hmm. Like that. You could say it both ways, like that.
So he's already there.
Yeah, well, he's there. Paramatma's there. Mm-hmm. So he's there. Either way, you can say.
Now, this first question about not going into Vrindavan, did you mean Saiva Kunj, maybe? Like what I heard Lord Shiva protects when you're asking?
It says, yeah, Saiva Kunj and Nijuvan, there's certain places where at night time no one is allowed to go in Vrindavan. Doesn't mean the whole of Vrindavan. It means there's certain little places in Vrindavan, like Saiva Kunj, Nitivan, different places. At night time, no one is allowed to go there because Krishna is doing pastimes there. So you can't go there until you're qualified. That's what it means. Any other question or comment?
Okay. By advancing Krishna consciousness, we need to be humble and accept the instructions of senior. Sometimes we have to instruct our junior. So where do we draw the line between instructing and appreciating or pushing, our neophyte devotees, so that it's not negatively affected, plus it's not too much ego is boosted in.
Yeah, you only give instruction to someone if they accept you as the authority. So if they don't accept you as an authority, then you can't instruct them because they're not listening to you. So if they accept you as authority, then you can give some instruction like that. And what is the mood of the devotee who is instructing? His mood is compassion. His mood is that he's trying to help the devotee. It's like the mother or the father. How do the mother and father treat the child? Sometimes they have to chastise the child, or sometimes they have to correct the child, but it's out of love. So the senior devotees, they should feel vatsalya bhav. They should feel that same mood. Like a parent is looking after the... So sometimes they have to say, okay, you're doing the wrong thing. But they're doing that out of affection, because they want to help the devotee improve. So you have to look at what is your motivation. Are you instructing, or are you giving guidance to the devotee because you want to help them? Or is it because, you have some egotistical desire you need to fulfill? So if that's your reason, then you're not qualified to instruct. Any other question or comment?
When people come to the temple for the first time and they've been for, like, I don't know what to do with them, like, always stuck. I was wondering whether, like, should they offer their obeisances? Should you tell them, offer your obeisances, or like, is that too pushy?
Yeah, if someone comes for the first time, then you take them into the temple and you offer your obeisances, so they see you setting the example. But if it's their first time there, you don't have to tell them to do it, because that's their first time. They don't even know what it is necessarily. First time a devotee ever brought me into this temple room, Jayatirtha Charanpuru, he brought me in here. He offered his obeisances, and I just, you know, I didn't know what was going on. But he didn't tell me, you have to offer your obeisances or anything. He just showed me the temple. So if someone comes for the first time, you show them the temple. You make sure they get prasadam. Prabhupada didn't want anyone to come to the temple and not get prasadam. Right? So make sure they get prasadam. And show them one of Prabhupada's books. Give them one of Prabhupada's books, show them the book, and then you can say to them, would you like to make a donation and take the book with you? Okay. And that's nice. And then invite them to come for some program. Keep contact with them and try to help them become Krishna conscious.
And sometimes I can close with
say it again.
Sorry,
I missed the point.
Sometimes these people have a lot of questions about Jagannath and why he looks, how he is, like, how deep in depth should we ask how he should play around anyway, but how in deep in depth.
I just say to people when they say Jagannath, I just say, this is God when he's happy. I just say he's really happy. I say, like, sometimes when you're really happy, you go. So I just say it's like that. It's God, but he's just really happy. And usually they just smile and they think of it. But you can't say anything too much. If someone comes for the first time, you can't say, you know, well, Rohini was speaking to, you know, the Dwarkabasis, and they're at Kurukshetra, and this was the topmost expression of Vipralamba Seva. That doesn't make any sense. Huh? Any other questions? Okay, Srila Prabhupada, key.